Bill, I'd like to take up the House Grant Resolution 65. We have a committee substitute for HGR number 65 from Resources. I accept the motion to adopt the
Council.
And of course, the committee substitute for HGR 65 Resources. Prime sponsor is Representative Herman. I'll take testimony from here at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Alfred Herman. I represent District 26, the Crystal Bay Aleutians in Pudeloff Island. The forecasted cream run for the upcoming season has caused a lot of fishermen concern for the possible lack of market or where there are market possible limits imposed. In the past, the fishermen have had to be put on limits due to the lack of processing capacity by existing processors. They've had to stop fishing and watch millions of fish go up the streams because the processors wouldn't or couldn't buy them. The existing market situation has also added to the problem. The prices that are expected to be paid for pink salmon can make the fishery no longer viable for the fishermen who rely on it to maintain their livelihood. HGR 65 basically requests that the governor of the state pursue additional foreign markets for pink salmon and other innovative pink salmon products. As many of you know, the state has been working on pilot projects for different product forms to help alleviate the problem of an abundance of canned pink, but more still needs to be done. There is also a section that requests the governor include salmon in with a targeted trade mission with China this summer for the timber trade. Since introduction of this resolution, I have learned that there may be an interest on the part of the Chinese for buying our pink salmon. If the situation ends up where the governor does allow foreign processors into purchase the surplus salmon, in order to protect our existing markets, the governor will be urged to stipulate in the permits that these foreign countries shall not re-export the salmon to other countries where we presently have U.S. domestic markets already established. I hope this could happen. Passage of HR 65 can only help our fishermen in their long battle to become economically stable in their fishing operations once again. I would encourage you to consider this resolution very seriously and allow it to pass on to me.
Local Director Representative Davis has joined us. Also, that we have a zero fiscal note. The bill was unanimously adopted by the Resources Committee. Representative Coconut.
There are no questions by the members of the committee.
Are there any objections? Not so moved. Next item we have before the committee today is House Bill 589. We also have the prime sponsor that was
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hopefully the committee has a CS stated 4486. It's the one we're operating on for today. Nobody has one. And I could just run through the changes that are made. There is a cover memo. Would not include them in the issue, and it just includes the people who write the same type of coverage as we're asking in this bill to be provided, in other words, major medical. And it wouldn't include people who just say writing cancer insurance or other specialty insurance in the state. The other change on page one was to make the division director of insurance an ex officio member of this board, a non-voting member. It also re-clarifies the language that the votes are on a weighted vote average based upon how much premium business rights in the state. On page two, it lays out some timelines of getting this plan into effect and deals with some effective date issues and gets, basically brings it into effect the 1st of July in 1987, but it gives a lot of time for this thing to be put together. On page four, there's some changes. There was a bad statute cited in your 2136-190, the fictitious group statute was in the CS. It shouldn't have been, and that's been taken out. On page four,
are you working off the work draft, or are you working off the draft?
I think I can work off the draft that you have there. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I just didn't. I was curious what you're referring to on page four and where it was in the bill.
Okay, on page. I think it'd be on page four. It's section 100 of the bill, 2555-100.
So that, I mean, I don't know if I'm looking at the same one, but I've got.
You find 2555-100. It's on page two of your draft.
Yeah, it's on page two. And so which section under is that?
100. Well, that's section 100.
Oh, this right here. Section 1, fictitious group.
Yeah, that section was taken out. And also in section 100, dealing with the Medicare supplement plan, that language there was clarified to make sure that was in the same of both groups. And then definition of high risk was included in the new CS, which is new language you don't have in front of you. It's in the memo that's in front of you what the language is. But it is a way of defining who is a high risk, which is necessary to have high risk coverage. I think that's an issue that Representative Copeland brought up last time. The other changes in terms of setting the minimum benefits, the issue of what is a usual, customary, reasonable, or prevailing charges was put out in the definitional section of the new bill and defined. So there was some certainty brought to that. In section 130 was the pregnancy section that I think Representative Pierce brought up the issue. That whole section has been deleted. There's no limitation on pregnancy issues, and I think that was probably a good move. And then there was an issue that in section
so that all 130 has been deleted? Or
yes. And in section 110, item 16, which had to do with an issue Representative Copeland brought up regarding transportation of professional ambulance services, that's been changed so that it now reads transportation by air or local license or certified ambulance to and from the nearest health care institution. So it includes air care and non-certified ambulances, I think. Probably a good item there. And in section 320, or section 160, there's a coordination of benefits issue that came up that could be double dipped and around, so that issue was taken care of. Setting up a method for determining whether there's coordinated coverage. Section 170, the issue of dependents and how you figure dependent coverage. In this bill, it just mandates that there'll be a flat charge for dependents, so that if you have it, you're on your own. If you want to bring a dependent on, there'll be a flat charge for additional dependents.
And before there was a
before it was just a to be laid out according to the benefits or to the package this way. Just kind of say, do it a flat rate, and I think that's acceptable and will work. And in section 320 deals with payments, changed it from a monthly premium to a quarterly premium. And this was in an effort to cut down the cost of administering the program. Less paperwork involved. And then the major change in the bill is in the back on page 17 of the new CS that's handed out. It's the definitional section, which attempts to define some of the ambiguities and issues that came up in the last meeting. And I guess I would ask Representative Boucher for his advice on defining what a resident is. In the bill on page 18, line 25, I and my parochial interest have set it at 12 months for a health care policy, and I guess I would ask your advice, Red, of whether that's going to be sustainable or not.
I think, Representative Thurman, basically in dealing with residents, the whole thing began in the state as a part of the voters' registration. We tried to register people for a year. The Supreme Court struck that down. Then we tried for 6 months. They struck that down. And then they finally came down and gave us 30 days. And 30 days is really not residency. What they did was allow us 30 days to administratively process. We could argue that it would take 30 days to process a person. So really, at least as it relates to voters, 30 days doesn't even mean residency. It means they get it's an administrative thing. I don't know if there's 30 days appears to be the most reasonable. You can try to. You can try.
Bill has the bill does have a judiciary referral. Yeah, it would be my hope that our attorneys there would have gone trying to establish what the constitutional
but we are able to establish residency for different purposes at different rates. So.
Not necessarily so. Excuse me. I'm sorry. They haven't been challenged yet. You can challenge Pioneer. You can go right down.
Strickland and both are results of court cases, finding regulatory, and the kind of privileges given are, you know, if they're different from other states rather than the same kind of privileges.
I think voting rights is one of the highest rights we have, and there's an extra presumption put on there. Whether inclusion in a health care plan rises to that right or where it is probably something less, I'm not sure 12 months is the right date. I just picked that to be included in there. I would just note for the committee that the general policy call in this bill is still here. There is virtually no opposition that I've found from any insurance carriers or anybody else to the formation of the association for the purposes of offering high-risk insurance, and that's insurance for high-risk people. This bill also sets up a mechanism to offer out a policy of major medical to people who are just merely residents. And I would note, not trying to fool anybody, there is opposition in some areas in the health insurance field that they think that by mandating that this association should offer a state or a medical plan which you can buy into merely because you're in the state is somewhat anti-competitive in its nature. I tend to disagree with them, but those are the two policy calls being made here. There may be some technical issues in the bill. I think we've got most of them, but there may be more that come along. But I just let the committee know that's what this bill really is doing.
I have a question now. There are other people that have
signed the term. I don't have
anything else. Do you have a question?
No,
I don't have a real question.
I would note there is a fiscal note on this bill submitted by the Division of Insurance that lays out a $37,000 fiscal note. declines over the next 5 years.
Representative, that fiscal note take into account the latest changes that...
Yes, it does. It's up to the latest bill in front of you.
Have we adopted this latest version of fourth floor bill?
No, we haven't.
Did you want that here? Okay, I'm moving that as consent. We use the fourth, is it the fourth floor draft? Is that the one?
Right.
The fourth floor draft is the bill before it.
Are there any objections? If not, we have the board of committee substitute for House Bill 589, Labor Commons. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Mark Tudor.
This is not all my speech.
But carried on protectively. For the record, my name is Mark Tudor, and I represent Blue Cross of Washington, Alaska. And I will agree with Representative Sun that we do have a philosophic difference in our handling of this topic. For the first bit, we at Blue Cross do not feel that legislation of this type is necessary, since we and a number of other carriers in the state do provide health care coverage for groups of small groups and individuals. We also provide Medicare supplement coverage that meets the Baucus amendments and what have you. Beyond Baucus, we have as I understand it from our legal people, we do go beyond Baucus in our Medicare coverage. This bill does establish a state-sponsored insurance association that consists of all carriers that would become competitive to its own members. Not really competitive, because there are no provisions in the bill for this association to be paying any of the premium taxes that we pay for doing business in Alaska. Another item is that we agree that there is not, at this time, any coverage for high-risk people in the state. However, there is mechanism from the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, of which our Director of Insurance belongs, a model for the development of a high-risk pool. And I think that should be looked at in the light of providing coverage in Alaska. For the standard risks, I don't have, and I haven't seen, any statistical information for the need for group coverage. We have our small group and individual coverage. We've provided this for a good number of years and continue to do so at rates that are more competitive or are better than some of our standard group rates, because in our standard non-group, that the policy is written based upon health statement. And this is a more expensive way of insuring. It also ensures the fact that we get a healthier group of people to join our plan. The plan as delineated in this 4-4 substitute does not consider the state-of-the-art mandates benefits 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, sort of like a book of the month club type thing. It provides for no management of healthcare services, such as the alternatives to inpatient management, utilization reviews, in-hospital continuing review of stays, outpatient subject or outpatient care where indicated. I think that the bill as written is going to be rewritten every year as it stands, because the state of the art changes. Just bang, bang, bang. Now, the bill also says says that this must be actuarially sound, but puts parameters on it that may not make it so. Our non-group, small group, loss ratio averages about 80%. And one of those reasons is we have a higher administrative cost in operating a small group and non-group program. In fact, that this calls for individual billings, it calls for medical statement underwriting. This bill also then calls out for a reward to someone who refers a person to the writing carrier. We just don't feel that that it's necessary, that or proper, that it says it must be actuarially sound, and then puts the parameters in there, the division of insurance that they're going to look at this coverage. I'm sure we'll do a good job of writing herd on that. And to be kind of, I guess, loose with words, I think that this bill could result in a dumping ground for people. A group or an insurer that covers a group that experiences high losses would, at renewal time, possibly offer this group that has resulted, cost a lot of money, new coverage at high rates. If they had had to put out $25,000 and then, you know, without the association, and then with the association, that same $25,000 would be spread over the carriers, our percentage of the business in Alaska would result in us paying only about $5,000. So we would probably make it possible for the writing carrier to gather more business. I just don't think that this bill, as it stands, meets the needs of the people. We're duplicating what exists. We do agree that the high risk should be worked on, and we will be happy to work with any committee or any staff in taking care of any technical parts of the high risk. But we do feel that the standard risk is very adequately covered in the with existing carriers. Yeah, I'll be happy to answer a question.
And you're one of the basic philosophies or ideas, I guess, in this legislation initially was to give the individual private citizen the opportunity to participate in kind of a group of insurance similar to what the state has. So you're basically are not in favor of that having a mechanism available for those people. Is that an accurate summation of part of your testimony?
Well, we feel that adequate coverage is available on a non-group basis now. Now, if you, I don't know what the state coverage is now. I can't say that this is any better or any worse. But we do have a non-group program for residents of Alaska that, with rates that are compatible with any coverage.
Compatible or competitive?
Oh, I think they're competitive, more than competitive. We also have the Medicare coverage. I know none of you are eligible, but I'm getting awful close. I wasn't going to say anything. We do know that high risk is a problem, and that NAIC model is available to be used as a basis, and probably should be, in the very near future, at least during the interim.
Are there any other questions, Mr. Chair? Do you have anything else? What kind of call?
I have one question. What kind of impact is this, if you actually manage to get a, what kind of impact is this kind of program going to have on other people who are already buying insurance or another insurance cost?
This could have a general cost shift in that if we are subject to paying out of pocket money for losses in, by this association, the loss will be picked up by the entire spectrum of the business.
Yes, I
have a question that essentially is not directly on the bill before or on the coverage that you provide, but a general question. We know that preventative medicine and early identification of medical problems is probably the most effective measure that can be used to keep costs low. Yet none of the programs, in fact, almost all of the programs I've seen, including the one we're covering for us, do not allow for payment of this kind of periodic examination, which might result in early identification. I can see from the viewpoint of a single competitor in a market where there are a number of firms competing, why it may not pay a Blue Cross provide that kind of coverage. But is there any movement toward providing that kind of examination or early identification, or would that be something that might be handled by some sort of group group agreement or something on a statewide basis to the benefit of not only of the the consumer, the client, but also to the benefit of the company?
Our plan development or program development group is working toward a preventative medicine program. We have it currently within our HMO, but that's not available in Alaska yet because of lack of population centers and clinics. But it is being worked on as a part of our regular group business.
I'd be grateful for any written information.
Sure. I'll get you our HMO information.
Thank you.
Just another question on this this health coverage. It seems like I had health coverage before and it's actually more expensive than the rates here. And I'm just curious, do you know what these plans that you have here, just for Washington rates the last year? That clarifies some of it. The other question I guess I had was, do you know how these plans size up with the plan that the state workers have?
My understanding is that the state plan for their people, families, are running about $225 a month. That's or whatever the state coverage is at this time, and I don't believe that it includes the supplemental. I believe it's just the basic major medical program. But then, that would, you'd have to get that information, I think, directly from...
No, I didn't mean that in terms of the price, but I just meant in terms of what kind of comparable coverage the state has versus what you have here in your brochure.
I don't have any information as to what the state program is.
Earlier you said in your testimony that these are comparable plans, so I just want to know if you have any real...
I'm sorry if I led you to believe that, because that is my understanding, that the basic program is comparable, that what the state has that goes beyond basic, like in dental and in vision and in audiology and things like this, I don't know.
All right, thank you. Note for the Dead Representative Family Insurance Association.
I will be happy to find out.
Any other questions? No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Gordon Evans?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for the record, my name is Gordon Evans. I'm an attorney with the General Office of the law firm of Guest and Rudd, and I'm here today to represent the interests of HIAA, the Health Insurance Association of America, which is an association that represents some 350 insurance companies which write 85% of private health insurance written in the United States. And approximately 20 of HIAA's member companies presently write both group and individual policies in Alaska. HIAA's position was referenced to a proposed committee substitute, or it is now a committee substitute. For House Bill 589 is one of strong opposition to the legislation for several reasons. First, HIAA feels that it is unprecedented legislation that is too far-reaching and far greater potential consequences than is being portrayed by its sponsor. In fact, except for the bill's prime sponsor and his staff, we're convinced that no one else has a real grasp on just what this bill would accomplish. I was advised that I should recommend to the committee that we feel that HIAA feels that the bill should be held for further study, possibly over the interim, be reintroduced next session if the study warrants it. Passing the bill out of committee just for the sake of moving along now, they feel would not be a responsible action. Statistics which HIAA has compiled show that more than 270,000 persons are now covered by group insurance in Alaska, and another 3,200 individuals are covered under individual policies. Those figures, which are the latest available, are, however, for the year 1983. So it cannot be said that there is not insurance available. It is possible that information has not been getting out adequately to individuals about what insurance might be available to them in the private market. And it may be that rather than create a whole new bureaucracy to compete with private industry, it would be better to work on an education program for the public that is presently uninsured. I'm advised by HIAA that not one other state has a program such as that proposed by this legislation. HIAA's belief that this legislation is really a socialized medicine program. While the stated intent of the bill is for the program to be self-supporting, the requirement of an 85% to 15% ratio claim to administrative costs is too high or too low, depending on how you look at it. There's no way the association could manage to without suffering a loss under that formula. You would create a scenario where the association is bound to lose money. The individual members who would be forced to belong to the association as a condition of doing business in Alaska are then going to have to kick in to make up the deficit. Ultimately, down the line, what we're going to see is that it's going to be unattractive, or so unattractive, for insurance companies to do business in Alaska that they're just going to pull out, and in which case, then, who's going to fund this state health plan? Under this bill, you'll have all insurers licensed to do business in the state, in effect, competing with themselves as they are administering the plan or belonging to the association that would be administering. Frankly, given the fact that there are probably only 20 companies writing health insurance in Alaska at this point, and I think that that doesn't include Blue Cross, it's my client's position that what you're going to do is create a disincentive for such insurers to do business in Alaska. In any event, HIAA believes that this bill is far too comprehensive a piece of legislation to move so quickly through the legislature without more thought being given to its effects. I can say that one of the concerns that we have was that the under the 85-15 requirement is that, and the statement was made the other day that, well, since the insurance companies who are belonging to the association would be themselves doing the actuarial work on determining how much the premiums are going to be, that they ought to be able to come up with the proper amount. Well, the problem with that is that if they, for whatever reason, if there's some sort of catastrophe or whatever that they don't come up with right now, then, of course, everyone who belongs to the association is going to have to kick in to that pool to keep the thing self-supporting. And is that part that HIA has indicated they feel is the bad part of the bill. They agree that, I think, as Blue Cross said, that something needs to be done probably for the high-risk people, but not at the expense of lumping everybody into one bill and forcing the company to do business in the state to belong to it as a condition of the state. I also had intended to provide earlier two members of this committee, and forgot to do so. We did give Representative Sund a copy of the NAIC model bill, which HIA has indicated it could support. And I would be glad to furnish copies of that bill to you later today if you wish.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Are there any questions? Representative
Davis. Mr. Evans, as you know, the original bill was a few pages long, and it's just been expanded several times. But you indicate to the members that they don't know what's in the bill. When we just saw the bill a few minutes ago, it sounds like a real good way to garner support for your position. And so I just wanted you to note that.
Well, Mr. Davis, or if I may, that's what one of the things I was getting at. This bill, as you know, was two bills to begin with, and then it was combined into one. And what I meant was the latest work draft of that proposed committee subject was just released last Friday afternoon. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not impugning your integrity as a commissioner. I'm just indicating that you really haven't had a chance, I do not believe, to give it the study that you really need to give it. And I'm not saying that you would never do so.
Thank you. I think that the high risk portion at least has some merit. I'm not completely comfortable myself with the rest of the bill. However, prime sponsor is a member of the next committee, which is Judiciary. With the concurrence of the committee, I'd like to pass the bill out of committee today. I'll notify the Speaker's office that I'd like to review the bill after it comes out of Judiciary to make sure that the committee members are comfortable with it, and if we're not, I'll bring it back to committee for further hearing. Are there any objections? If not, I'd like a motion. Representative Copeland. Are there any objections? If not, so moved. Representative Hanley.
Mr. Chairman, there is no objection with the understanding that
you mentioned
and bringing that back.
That is the understanding. Thank you, Representative Hanley. We also had one other thing that we considered taking up today, and that's the Boards and Commissions. I'm not going to take them up today. I'd like to hold them over one more day or until Wednesday's meeting. And I've heard from some of you on some of them. If you'd like, we can go have each individual one so that you can put whether you want to
review them or not. I reviewed them, but that no particular problem.
If there aren't any objections, we could do this today. Representative Hanley, thanks.
I had two objections. One was with the athletic commission person. I no longer have a concern with that position, so I have no problem. The one I still would like to talk a couple more people about is the hairdressers and the gentleman from Fairfax.
Okay.
I'm satisfied with the athletic commission.
Are there any other objections? I know Representative Bowden had one.
You've got the correspondence on that.
Right. That's what I'd like.
That's the only objection I have. Did you get
that's not the one we have.
I'll hold this one over until Thursday of this week. Until Wednesday of this week. And if you have a problem, then hold it over until Thursday. My intention is to cast all of them except those ones with absolute problems on Wednesday, no later than Thursday. If there are no objections, then the meeting is adjourned after you sign the 589 report. The time is 2:00.